This episode is brought to you by Jacobson Salt Company, America's leading salt maker. Learn more at jacobsonsalt.com. That's JACOBSENSALT.com. This week on Meat and Three, we're exploring food for the eyes, how the art and culinary worlds collide.
It's incredibly elaborate. It's a feast for the eyes, a banquet dinner with garnished ham, turkey, and an array of accompaniments.
We shot baguettes with like paint dripping off of them with the blue, white, and red from the French flag.
Oh, what did the student tell me? They said, the camera eats first. And it's so true. It's so true.
Tune in to Meat in 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum, and I love to talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. If you're just tuning in for the first time, all the previous episodes of Feast Your Ears can be found in the archives at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm thankful for listeners like you, and I would love it if you'd leave me a review wherever you find this podcast. Big thank you to Jacobson Salt, who is our sponsor today. Today's theme, what is banchung? It never ceases to amaze me that after years eating all sorts of food from all over the world, you can still find things you've never heard of. And not just an ingredient, but an entire dish like banchung, which I hadn't heard of until recently. It's a Vietnamese Lunar New Year's dish made with glutinous rice, pork belly and fish sauce, mung beans, and shallots. Described like a Vietnamese tamale, the ingredients are wrapped in banana leaves and cooked overnight to meld into a delicious cake. I sat down recently with Deep Tran, who's the R&D chef for Redboat Fish Sauce, to talk about banchung and her banchung collective. She's bringing the tradition of this dish into the 21st century, and she was on tour spreading the gospel, banchung, and I had the chance to sit down with her in New York. Listen in. Hope you enjoy it. Well, thanks so much for sitting down with me.
Yes, thanks for having me.
So, can you introduce yourself and tell me what you do?
Okay, my name is Deep Tran, and I am the R&D chef of Redboat Fish Sauce, and I also an annual event called the Banchung Collective.
Awesome, and that's why you're in New York right now, right?
That's why I'm in New York.
Awesome. What is banchung?
Banchung is a, people call it like a Lunar New Year cake, but bun is like a catch-all word in Vietnamese, so this is more like a dumpling. Or like a Vietnamese tamal.
Okay. Yeah, so, sure. Yeah. It's in a banana leaf, right?
Yes.
Rather than a tamal, which would be in a corn husk usually, right?
Well, I liken it to a Salvadoran tamal.
Oh, okay.
Which is, or sure. Like, or if you're from, I forget, like, I think the Yucatan, mm-hmm. they also use banana leaves.
Got it. So what is the sort of goal of the collective? Is it to make the banchung for the Lunar New Year? Is it to share in teaching it? What's the goal?
The goal of banchung, of the banchung collective is all of that, to make banchung, celebrate Lunar New Year, but it has a larger goal. One is, I just started it, it was like an informal collection of friends, and I'm just the one that was like, hey, let's really do this. And I wanted to, it's just like a time to, like, for me it was like I was still I still had a restaurant at the time, so I was like, super busy, and I said, hey, let's just do this, I'll provide everything, just come. And I just wanted to like be in a group setting with a bunch of women making banchung, which is kind of like, men do make banchung, but it's a lot of time it's women getting together, and it's like a quilting bee, or just that kind, sure, of like woman's work that I really like. And at the same time, I always like to look for the subversive in kind of like these domestic arts, which is like, it's the time when you have an excuse to like send the men folk away, because you have to do work. And then it's kind of like a rowdy time for the women. It's usually like the typical banchung, it's like huge, like a 7 by seven square dumpling.
Okay, much bigger than I expected.
And then 3 inches high.
Okay,
so
wow.
It's huge.
So it's like a cake.
It's like a fruit cake.
Yeah.
You know, and it lasts a long time. You gift it out to friends. You get some back. It's but it's a so it usually takes like it's an overnight vigil. So the women get to hang out overnight. They play. You know, like in the north where I'm culturally from northern Vietnam. You know, the women play a certain kind of card game that when you play it, it's kind of, it's these little markers that tell you, yeah, you're definitely from the north.
Okay.
You know,
sure.
And not that men don't play, it's called tamkuk, you know, and it's not that necessarily men don't play it either, but it's just kind of part of like, it just is colored by this like woman's realm. And, you know, and being queer, you know, like I always try to find woman-only spaces and then queerize that somehow, you know.
Yeah.
And also, I wanted to just, so it is like the celebration of women, but also like to be a firm connection with women. And also, I wanted to not just be about Vietnamese American women or Vietnamese women, but also about like, you know, for me, my community is not just just based on ethnicity, but it's also women of color, the
sure.
solidarity communities. So it was just like a way to like broaden what I for me the celebration of Tết beyond the familial, because sometimes the familial is actually not the safest space for people to be in.
Sure.
And that's especially true for a lot of queers, you know. And with something like Tết, it is usually a time, it's a very heteronormative, like a lot of holidays, you know. It's the Tết is when you acknowledge new births, you acknowledge new marriages, you know, that you become, you fully become an adult once you have a baby.
Right.
Then, because that's, once you have a baby, I think there's some people, like, sometimes when you have a baby, then you stop receiving money and you start to give out money because you ascend into adulthood, you know, or sometimes when you get married. Now that target has changed,
sure.
You know,
because
then the adults are like, we're fucking having to give money to the fucking 30-year-olds. Before, you know, when you were 18, you were done. You're like married and popping out kids.
Yeah, that's very, that's an interesting point that the cultural sort of markers of when you are actually an adult. I mean, I moved out of the house the week after I graduated from high school when I was 18 years old, and I never lived with my parents again.
Mm.
I mean, I love them, and I have a very close relationship with them and always have, but, like, I was, like, I got a job, I'm out, I'm going to college, like, I'm doing my own thing, I'm on my own.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? So, that... And, you know, like those are the markers of you're, like, a fully sufficient person.
Sure.
Because hopefully by the time you have your first child, you will be able to support them.
Hope so. Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, again, those markers have changed a little bit.
Yeah, of course. I love that the sort of history of the Bon Chung making is this kind of coming together of people, especially women, and that you're sort of carrying that forward. What it reminds me of from my own life is that my mother was part of the consciousness raising movement in the 1970s, sort of feminist movement, which was, you know, not quite the same, because actually there were very clear guidelines. They weren't allowed to cook. Like, it was this breaking away from, like, the women's work in the kitchen things. Mm-hmm. But it was about women getting together and sending their husbands away or their partners away and having the time as a group of women to talk about issues and things. And, you know, but they were very specifically not allowed to cook. But it sounds like kind of some of the, whether stated goals or just the things that happened surrounding that gathering are very similar.
Yeah, I mean, because also, you know, we were all women in food professionally.
Got it.
So it was all our profession. I mean, they weren't all, you know, some of us were chefs, some of us were pastry chefs, you know, so there was like, or like some of us worked in PR, you know.
Right,
so
but in food
it's
related.
It is like a decide. Like, you know, we did this for several years, and I just like, what do we call ourselves? I was just like, let's just meet up for Bon Chung. But I'm like, I think we're becoming a group, you know? And so I'm like, what about the Bon Chung Society? I'm like, it's too formal.
Yeah.
And it's like a little stuffy and you know, and I'm like, we're like a bunch of broads, you know? You know, like that's, you know, so, but then I was like, I don't think we think it's going to I just feel like at some point if you name yourself, you kind of think about the outside world, you know? Yeah. And so I just kind of like the idea of a collective. And this, and people are a little confused, you know, because a collective is a certain thing, but it's really, it's almost like a, it's a collective that just convenes once a year. It's more like a convening, but I just feel like also a convening was also too formal too.
Right.
There's something about a collective that seems really fun.
That's awesome.
So,
and so is this the first time you've brought it to New York?
This is the first time I bought it outside of California. So New York is the first stop. But yeah, we've been doing it for like 8 years. 2 years ago, I invited folks outside of my personal network.
Oh, wow.
Because when I was, I still had my restaurant, Good Girl Dinette. It was, you know, I was busy.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, after I closed the restaurant, I said, hey, there's no reason for me to keep it small. And so it moved from, like, sometimes we got up to like 20 people, previous years. And sometimes we had 6 because it was like attrition, you know. But we ended up getting like 120 people last year.
Wow.
So the second year is like 140, you know, with all the volunteers, it's like 160 at a farm. But yeah, so, and then Dennis Ngo from D&D had been following us and says, hey, bring it to New York. And I'm like, yeah, let me think about it. And by then I was already working for Red Boat Fish Sauce. And I said, hey, you know, want to sponsor me to do this? Because, you know, I mean, we always have used Red Boat in our, it makes a total difference in the banchung, because banchung is so simple. There's like very few ingredients. There's glutinous rice, there's pork, there's fish sauce, there's mung beans, and there's pepper. I mean, like, it's very, and shallots. You know, like, it's super simple. So this
now
is
I
one.
Make it.
It's delicious. It's delicious. You know, I'll send you a kit.
Oh, thank you.
It's super fun. Because we have to limit the amount of people who can come.
Sure.
In a day.
Yeah.
So I just say, hey, you know, here's a kit. You can buy the kit. And
oh, neat.
It's not as fun. You know, it's
sure.
just there's something about, like,
no,
it's
but
like
I would
a
love
tamalada,
to do
you know? Like,
yeah.
There's something about.
No, I mean, I'd love to do it. It'd be fun to do with, like, my kids and my niece and nephew and, like,
yes.
like teach them about it, because it's very, you know, I mean, whenever you're doing hands-on stuff, I mean, I teach them about, you know, we make sauerkraut and we do, mm-hmm. you know, handmade mm-hmm. tamaki and sushi, and like
nice.
All the hands-on stuff they really love. So it feels like it might be kind of a fun thing to sit around a table with everybody and kind of explore.
Yes. Well, especially because the way I do it, my banchung is not 7x7x3.
I was going to say, I saw some pictures on your Instagram. It looks a little smaller than
yeah,
that.
It's like
yeah,
it's like a mini corn dog, you know? So it's perfect for small hands, but
nice.
At the same time, it's also like, you know, like being a chef, I'm like, I just want to make this different, you know?
Sure.
But
it's nice to portion it that way too. I mean, of course, I'm thinking now and I'm like, well, if my kids like it, then they can take it for lunch.
Yes.
Right? Like
yes.
then it becomes a portionable thing that they made.
Exactly.
And like there's a whole thing in there.
Yeah. But it's also like, you know, when you make like a big banchung, you cut it up usually with like a string, you know, because it's very
oh,
sticky.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
A
knife
yeah.
is just going to get
it's just,
make a mess.
You're going to lose that knife in the banchung. The knife is going to lose. Or you're going to have a knife that you will never get clean.
Be so covered in rice.
Yeah. And the glutinous rice is like plaster.
Yep.
So this is tiny. It's because it's smaller, the cook time isn't that much. I mean, the longer you cook it, the better the rice is, because the rice, what you end up doing with a long cook time, like an overnight cook, is that the rice melts and becomes like a, you know, becomes a dough versus that's why you use glutinous rice.
Sure.
Too. But when you cut it up, it's kind of like you can see the layers a little better.
Yep.
But I like to have every banchung to be encrusted with wonderful glutinous rice.
Yeah.
So it kind of, like, you enrobe it. It's almost like little mini chocolates, and you enrobe it with some more chocolate. So I love it, and kids really love it because it's so manageable. It's very hard to do a big one.
Sure.
I think it's, they some are like, oh, I don't really feel this, but like the ones that get into it,
yeah.
you just love it because they just really, they because it can be an obsessive project. It's,
right.
I kind of like, I'm not religious, but it's pretty meditative.
Nice.
You know, like it's just, then you want to know, like, it's almost like it's, you kind of want to make it better each time, you
yeah.
know, and then there's, and it's I love a haptic art that, like, you can, there's many ways to get to that end product, you know? So anyway, like, I can just zone out for like 4 hours and just like
make them
do this thing, you know? Yeah. And, that's awesome. And we, I mean, when we started the collective, it was like, I said, I remember making it with my grandparents, but it's been so long, like at that time, like over 20 years, someone says, I know what it looks like. And so, and these are Vietnamese women. And someone was like, well, I wrapped it, but I didn't do the cook time because I went to sleep. I woke up and the bunching was already ready. And so I'm like, you know what? With all this and YouTube, we can fucking figure this out, you know? And so somebody wanted tamale pot, which didn't work. You know, like all these different, you know, I mean, we had a form of success, but we didn't cook it long enough. So we made like soy, which is glutinous rice and everything. It's just like, it's just steamed just enough.
Yeah.
You know, to have the rice plump up and cook, but that's not, you want it to melt.
Yeah.
And so every year we started getting better, you know, like one person started doing a sous vide, but the sous vide took even longer, you know, but I'm like, oh, and then one year, somebody bought the instant pot to make mung beans. My friend Aaron bought it. And then they're like, hey, let's put some bunching in there. And I was like, ooh, that totally worked. But then we wanted to tweak it a little bit more. And so just every year, like whatever we learned in the group was just like kind of honed it to like, okay, how do we make it better?
Traditionally, it would have just been in a steamer, like in a bamboo style. How is it normally cooked?
Every like January the 2nd is when I start the bunching vigil on Instagram. Where because that's when the pot starts to show up. It's a huge pot. It's usually outdoors.
Okay.
You know, and it's just like these beautiful, like campfire kind of pots. And then you know, like people who are really into it because there's multiple pots. You know, and it's a gorgeous thing, and it's you just. You do a hard boil because they're pretty intense, okay. And you just keep on putting water in.
Oh, okay, got it.
And overnight, and it's so funny, you know, I'm 48, 47, 48, I don't remember anymore, I started to see young people post in Vietnam about their bunching fails. Because you don't do it right, the bunching, the water evaporates and you burn your bottom bunching.
Right.
And then the other bunching doesn't get cooked.
Right.
And so there's all these bunching fails, which I thought was just hilarious. It's just like the whole young people embracing their failures.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so, but yeah, so I love that because it's very romantic. You know, but at the same time, I'm like, okay, we can have romance in other ways. Like, how about we make tiny, cute little ass, you know, bunching? And so with an Instant Pot, I feel like the Instant Pot was a game changer.
Cool.
And so instead of 6 hours or overnight, we make our bunching in 40 minutes.
Oh, so you pressure cook them?
Pressure cook for 20. So, which is like an hour cook.
Yeah, of course.
To pressure,
but, you know? I mean, that's much better than having to stay up all night.
Yes, and it was so funny. Like, I just did my bunching in L.A., which is the first, which launched the tour. Somebody said, oh, you know, I can't really stay here, you know, or it's going to take too long. Can I cook this at home? I don't want to wait an hour. I'm like, of course. And I said, well, how do you cook it at home? I said, do you have an Instant Pot? She goes, no. And I said, okay, well, you're going to have to cook it for 6 hours.
Right. Either stay here for an hour or go home and spend 6 hours. Yeah.
You know, and she's like, because she was all complaining. I'm like, girl, it's not 6 hours, okay? It's like an hour. And we're serving you fours. I mean, it wasn't, like, you know, but I think I think it's like I'm not getting any money from Instant Pot, but I'm just like, Vietnamese people are like gonna like,
they get a
bump in like Vietnamese people. It's because everybody realized, but the bunching
right there.
So you can, because mine was smaller, like a bigger one, you do an hour, you know. But seriously, it's amazing. And when you make a big pot, what you do is you all that pork. Because it's made with pork belly, it's to do it right.
Yeah,
you know, and I hate when, like, you know, there's nothing wrong, but
right.
Like, you know, but you do the pork belly because you want it to be really, really rich.
Sure,
and it makes it just really
right,
luscious.
Right, you've got all the fat and the gelatin in there.
Yes, it gets trapped in all the rice, but when you do it in a big pot, it leaches out. Not too much. You still have a flavorful bunching in the end, but what we do is put in a food saver. with some water so that we have enough to cook it. We take as much air out as we can. So what it does is whatever it leaches out gets absorbed back in.
Right.
And it is going to be the most the texture is going to be the most tender.
Yeah.
Banchan you've ever had.
Right.
And the fattiest.
Yeah.
You know, it's magical, you know. And then what I try to give the lily, so we deep fry it, you know. And so it's like the sweet rice puffs up, has a really beautiful, I mean, the frying is like it's like my take on what you do to banchan. It's like you have a banchan that's 7x7x3, so it's sure. A lot to eat. So usually maybe you'll have like a quarter, you eat a quarter, or maybe you eat half.
Right.
But you have this other half.
Right.
That the next day, what do you do? Because once you unwrap the banchan, it dries out.
Yeah.
So people would usually do is just cut it and then smash it and then pan fry it.
Okay.
You know, but I like the fryingness, but I also want it to have a tender texture.
Yeah.
So this way you get the fry.
Crispy outside and tender inside.
Yes. I mean, if you only deep fry once a year, this is the one.
It's worth it.
It is. It looks different. You know, it's, yeah, I love it.
I'm sold. I'm going to make it for sure.
This episode is brought to you by Jacobson Salt Company. Jacobson's flake and kosher sea salts have garnered worldwide favor for their beautiful presentation and pure taste. In addition to an extensive assortment of pure sea salts and infused sea salts, Jacobson Salt Company also produces a line of salty confections, honey, cocktail salts, seasonings, gift sets, and other pantry staples. Harvested from the cold, pristine waters of Neatarts Bay on the Oregon coast, Jacobson Salt Company is a favorite amongst professionals and home cooks alike. Founded in 2011, Jacobson Salt Company's mission is grounded in craftsmanship and community, maintaining the vision of providing the very best cooking ingredients, from hand-harvested sea salt to single-origin honey. More information on Jacobson Salt Company and their extensive line of products can be found at jacobsonsalt.com.
So let's talk about fish sauce.
Yeah.
So I read some other interviews and you often mention your grandparents as one of your greatest culinary influences.
Yes.
And that they, when they came to the United States, were completely like beside themselves that the fish sauce was terrible.
Yeah, and my grandparents were entrepreneurs. Like they hustled every hustle, you know. So one of their hustles was they didn't make the nikmam, but they helped in either like the distribution of some or like grandma said like yeah. There was one time where like I imagine this after a while your stories about your grandparents, I don't know, you know.
Sure.
But like
legend, right?
Yes, but he was like my grandma was the brain. My grandpa was the brawn. You know, so he would be like ferrying, like I just imagine like a bicycle, a very, very rickety bicycle with some crates of nikmam in the back.
Yeah.
And just like ferrying it to one village or another, you know. But yeah, my grandma, she also like made cakes. I mean, she just like did rice futures. I mean, it was just like she came from a small village, super ambitious. And like she wanted to like. She wanted to be like a lady in town, you know, versus just a village, you
yeah.
know, and she did it. And so she was, food was always a big part of like her, either her business or the way she fed people or whatever. And she was she had a great palate. I think like what makes a great cook is a palate. That's it. Like that's how she can recreate stuff. You know, like you can eat. That's kind of how she also made some enemies when she was younger, because she'd be like, she'd go to the market and she'd, oh, somebody's making these cakes and they taste great. And I know exactly how they did that, you know. And then she would improve on it. And then she'd open a stall next to them.
Right.
You know, like just, yeah, she was super ambitious that way. But so her palate's really good. So it's kind of like a blessing and a curse, because she comes here. She loves to cook. And we made charcuterie, like Vietnamese style charcuterie jalua, which is kind of like a mortadella.
Mm-hmm.
And, she would make it, and every Saturday is when the Vietnamese congregation met at church. We were Catholics. She would make jalua so that after church, she'd be like, hey, she'd like cut the jalua into little cubes, put toothpicks on them, and made me and my siblings go out and say, hey, would you like some? If you want, it's in that VW bus over there, you know? And so, you know, that was, the jalua was also wrapped in banana leaf, you know? And so she was always hustling. So trying to make food in the U.S. was so difficult. I mean, she ended up making it work, but yeah. She's like, oh, just, like, I just remember being, and the scene happened every time they would go to the market, the Vietnamese market, and their favorite Vietnamese market, and they would just look at, because there's a plethora of fish sauce. The brands are sure. They just kind of, you glaze over. You know, like, yeah. When you look at, like, a bread selection in a supermarket, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, and especially for someone like me, I mean, I love Asian markets, and I go to them all the time, and I love strong fish flavors, and I actually would love to make my own fish sauce. It's just maybe later we can talk about that. But, you know, I go, and I look, and I don't know the difference between them, right? Like, I mean, Red Boat is awesome because it's a brand that I know and I've found, and really I do find it to be delicious, but I am unable to go into a Vietnamese market and look at 17 different kinds of fish sauce, and some of them are chunkier, some of them are clear, some have shrimp on the label, and some have squid on the label, and like have any idea what the differences are.
Exactly. And the thing is that at some point there wasn't that variation. It was just like, once you look at the label, you just know it's full of all these things they try to make taste fish sauce like, you know? And I just like, because I'd had to follow them to the market many times, I'd be like, oh, the fuck, you know, like, just pick something, you know? Like, I'm just...
Because they were looking at every single one.
No, they would just be in front of the shelf, just sighing, just sighing, just sighing, kvetching, you know? Like, just, you know, like, and then I'm like, what is, you know, just pick something. And they're like, they know what brand they like, you know, after trial, but they're always in search. And I, you know, and I said, it just all tastes the same to me, you know, and they just look at me with just like such derision, I guess, and also pity, you know, like, you don't know because you don't remember the taste of it, you know, and it's like, you know, Gung, the founder of Red Boat, always calls it like fish sauce is a backbone of a lot of Vietnamese cuisine.
Yeah.
So it's like one, you know, that is like the foundation of so many things.
Right.
You know, when
it's like in French cooking, you need good butter, right?
Yes.
Like
yes.
Without good butter,
exactly,
it's gonna be not as good, right?
Yeah. And or you didn't shit bricks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, so they would just like they. Even though they knew, like, after decades, they knew that this is all the selection, they would still, like, hold out hope and just look at that shelf. Maybe yeah. They'll find something.
Yeah.
And so when I read an article early, it was like when Red Boat launched, I said, what? This, because every label it says Nuoc Mắm Nhĩ, which is supposed to mean, like, you know, like the like an unadulterated fish sauce, the one that you, it's like the first... I mean, they call it the first press, but, you know, because for lack of a better word, but I think it's the first extraction.
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, you are pressing it.
Yeah, but it's not the same as, like, pressing olives or something. Like
yeah,
that.
And, you know, I just feel like extra virgin fish sauce, there's not such a thing, right. You know? It's like, no. It's extra funky.
Yeah.
It's so good. So, yeah, so I just felt like I had found, like, a holy grail, my grandparents. You know, and then when I tasted it, because I don't remember the taste of it.
Sure.
You know, I left it now when I was six. So I was like, oh, I fucking get it. Like, I get why you'd still want this taste and still search for it for decades
yeah.
later. So that's kind of like, you know, like, that's why the Red Boat is like, super, for me, like, super key to the bunching is because it is like this, you know, this it's. It is like something I feel like if my grandparents were alive, they're like, yes, that is a good stuff. You want this
right.
for Tet. You don't want to, you know, like Tet is when you like are generous. But another way to think about it is when you show off. You know, like you seriously going to wear some fake stuff? You know, use some fake stuff?
Right.
Or are you going to use like.
The real stuff. Yeah.
This is the stuff. This is when you show off.
Yeah.
This is you show up and you show out, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. So.
Totally. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, fish sauce, for anyone who's listening who doesn't know, is made usually with, you know, what we term anchovies as kind of like a broad term, but small fish that essentially are just put in, are salted and put into a vessel and left to their own devices with the enzymes. And what happens over time is that it breaks down sort of all of that flavor, and what it yields is, you know, as Deep said, the kind of, you know, the backbone of a lot of what we think of as Vietnamese flavors, I think, in this country, but it has a lot of uses outside of that.
Totally. I make pesto with fish sauce instead of Parmesan. And that was pretty, you know, I was like, I'm going to try this. I don't have any Parmesan. Let me replace
great.
One umami with another.
Yeah.
It's really, it is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's only, you only need a splash.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing is that, and I feel like the first time, you know, when I was in my 20s and was kind of really like moved to New York and was like, oh my God, I have access to all this stuff. I was like, you know, oh, let me try this. Let me buy some of this fish sauce. And I put it in greens or something and I like thought of it like vinegar.
You need a splash.
And I put in so much that it was like way too intense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I every year I do a turkey brine for Turkey Day, and it would change your life.
That sounds awesome. Last night I was at a friend's house and they had just made some squash soup and they were like, it seems like it needs something. And I was like, well, do you have any fish sauce?
Mm-hmm.
And so we just put a little splash of fish sauce into the squash soup and it was like just what it needed.
Yes. And it's funny, like, you know, when we tell like, oh, how do you make fish sauce? Like anchovies and salt, you know, it's simple, not so simple, you know, like,
right.
like just like any kind of fermentation.
Yep.
It you do really have to, it is a practice in terms of paying attention,
sure.
knowing when to pull from,
yep.
when to extract, when not to. Red boat ages theirs for like a year, you know, but even then, like, you can see, you still have to track the changes,
yeah.
you know, but yeah, I feel like people have a squick about fish sauce. I go, well, why don't you try our red boat salt caramels, and then I will.
Yeah,
I want to talk
about that. So you guys also just did a collaboration with
Little Flower,
but also
yeah.
with, is it Valeria?
Valerie.
Infections, yeah.
Yeah, we for the Lunar New Year, we wanted to launch a sweet, and Valerie Gordon of Valerie Confection is a wonderful chocolatier. So I was like, hey, you know, would you be interested in doing like a salted cashew, because cashews are really big in Vietnam.
Sure.
Vietnam supplies a lot of the U.S. cashews. So what about a cashew chocolate bar? And she's like, I'm on it. So she was really gung-ho for the project. And so, so we have this wonderful chocolate. We'll send you some. it's delicious. And so it's just like a way to... And the thing is also that was actually just showcase our salt. Because Red Bull...
Sure.
Invest in two ingredients, black anchovies and the salt. And Gung, he is very particular about his salt, you know, because if you don't have two ingredients, it's
right.
You gotta,
yeah.
you know, yeah.
They better both be good.
Yes. So he's very particular. So that being the case, once you extract the liquid from the anchovies, the fermented anchovies, what you have left are just like, the salt that's left, because
sure.
you know it like just like sea salt, it just rises up. It's a state. It solidifies.
Yep.
And so because the salt was so amazing, I think one of the chefs went. Sometimes we invite chefs to the Barrow House to see what's going on. Because I mean, like especially if you don't understand how fish sauce is really made, it's
yeah.
really eye opening.
Yep.
And you get to respect the product a little more once you know more about it. And one of the chefs just like. It's like, oh, what's clinging onto those barrels? And he goes, oh, that's the salt. And so somebody tasted it and said, oh, this, you should do something with this. And
right,
so
just, it was just a byproduct, right?
Yes, yeah. And so because the salt is so good, because if you use shitty salt, then it's too acrid, you know. So since the salt is like such high grade, we started to do the salt, and I said, you know, like, let's do some, let's make some product out of this to kind of like showcase like all its diversity. But yeah, but like people are definitely using salt in like caramels and, you know,
It's awesome.
Cocktails for sure.
Oh wow.
Yeah, like a Bloody Mary.
Oh yeah.
Anything where you use like a Worcestershire sauce.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I mean those have anchovies in there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Or Maggie.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, as you know, how is it for you to have gone from having a restaurant to your role now as the R&D chef for a fish sauce company? Like, it seems like it employs a lot of the same skills in terms of thinking about food, but also it must be very different.
It is very different to not have to do payroll at 2:30 in the morning. Like, when you're in a restaurant, when you own a restaurant, it's just like you never sleep, yeah. Which is the bargain you struck, you know?
For
and,
sure.
And I love doing it. We were just priced out in terms of rent, yeah. You know, like at some point, I'm like, damn, the rent's going to go super high. And, you know, we were fighting it as much as we could. And I'm like, I just don't want to be in business just to pay for rent, yeah. and Postmates.
Right.
You know? Yeah, so I was just like, and my body, you know, yeah, as I got older, like, I just couldn't do 12 hours a day anymore, you know, it was like, and so I felt myself aging, and I think there was some part of me, like, I just couldn't delegate the way I needed to, mm-hmm. to, like, grow older and still have a business.
Sure.
You know, so that was just not a forte that I honed very well. So I was like, it's time to go. And as much as I felt sadness for it, you know, I just felt like, you know, I have, because like I have other ambitions, other passions that you just, you just can't do, unless you delegate, you can't do it all,
right.
You know? And so I said, okay, well, now that I don't have a restaurant, what do I want to do? And I said, you know, I have deep compassion for restaurant owners, you know, for many reasons. One being that, you know, I grew up in a restaurant family and just kind of saw how hard it was for workers, mm. you know, and that, yeah, hard it is to, like, especially being a Vietnamese restaurant, like having to be cheap, you know, like the idea of like this, like just like this stranglehold that Vietnamese restaurants are under to like remain a certain price point, even though it means a lot of human suffering, you right. know. And so I said, well, what can I do, like, well, how can I like help other Vietnamese American chefs do what they want to do, try to pay workers better, you know, how can I, you know, what can I do to help them with that? Because I find like I'm still in the fight, I just don't have a restaurant anymore.
Sure.
You know, so, you know, like places like, you know, any place that I feel like is trying to break out of the mold, you know, I really try to support. And that's kind of how what I see myself doing at Red Bow too, is like, you know, shining a light on chefs that we really love, especially chefs we know, like, you're doing something different. And just like Red Bow, you know, Red Bow is, you know, we didn't want to use cheap product, we wanted to invest. So, you know, like, it was kind of like a symbiotic role where, like, I think that's Red Bow's value too, like they understand the value of quality, what it means to for people, you know. And so we kind of want to support that, you know, that entire movement towards like breaking Asian ingredients and Asian cuisine out of like the cheap eats realm, you
right.
know, not that you can't be affordable, all this other stuff, but you know, it's like immigrant cuisine is like, so it has this like just this onus to have to provide food at such a low price,
yeah.
no matter what the cost is,
yeah.
So I felt like in some ways I'm more effective.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
Yeah. Like, RIP GGD, but, you right. know, like, I'm good, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, I think if I was really ruled my money, I wouldn't have opened the restaurant I opened.
Sure.
You know? I have a lot of debt from the debt if I'm
going yeah, yeah, yeah.
to close the restaurant, you know? But I don't have a real regrets, because I feel like, in the end, if I see any staff on the street, I don't have to avert my eyes. I
right.
didn't cheat them.
Right.
You know? And
right.
It's a rarity. Yeah,
sure.
You know, and it's like, so I was like, and usually it's like, especially restaurants that failed, they usually stiff their staff in the
right.
very end,
yeah.
you know? So I made it sure, like, when I knew I couldn't afford the rent anymore, I looked for someone to take over the space. I said, oh, give me a month and a half to say goodbye to the neighborhood, and also to help my staff, like, not worry yet. They have a month and a half to find something.
Yeah.
I could help place them,
yep.
you know? Like, obviously, I'm like, I can't guarantee everything, but I'm like, you're going to get a month and a half. You're not going to get 2 weeks before, you know. And then this month and a half is going to be incredibly crazy, you know. But it's a way to, like, if you need it, like, you know, keep this job and find another job, and, you know, like just whatever it is. Like, yep. I just feel like I'm good with how it ended.
Yeah. That's, you know, I mean, I have a lot of respect for you for having done it that way. That's really, a lot of people don't. So.
Yeah. And no shade to them, because they're just.
No, it's hard. I mean, it's an closing a business. I mean, I've done it. It is an incredibly difficult, mentally taxing, physically taxing, monetarily, economically taxing time for people. And, you know, you have to just get through it eventually.
Yeah, I didn't want my staff to be holding the bag, because they are, you know, everybody, they're the ones that live hand to mouth, you know, and, you know, and my vendor, it took me 2 months after I closed Oak, pay him, and he was a little worried. I'm like, look, I am good for it.
Yeah, you know.
But, you know, all the debt I still have, they're personal friends of mine. So I'm like, okay, it might take me till I'm 80.
Right, but I'm going to do it. Yeah,
so, that's the stuff that I feel like, I feel good about. I feel like, yeah. So I have, like, total peace with it. And I still get to be in food, but in a different way.
Yeah.
And I love, you know, I think I kind of like being in a supporting role. You know, like, it feels good. And it's
exciting.
Like, yeah, and I used to work in nonprofits. So the idea of, like, service is, like, you know, yeah, it's something that feels good for me. Yeah.
So after New York is the Bon Chung Collective. Are you doing any other
San
events?
Francisco.
San Francisco
we're
next.
We're moving to San Francisco.
Okay.
Every spot in this tour has some, like, personal, like, has its own charms. You know, like, L.A., obviously, my hometown, you know?
Yeah.
New York, I really love what D&D is doing. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I'm like, this is exactly the kind of restaurant I'd love to do bunching here. And in San Francisco, we're partnered with La Cocina.
Oh, cool.
And I love La Cocina.
Yeah.
Its mission.
Yep.
You know, our site for the Los Angeles bunching is at Alma Backyards, and it is a program that that welcomes back formerly incarcerated folks who work on the farm. And just, like, it's in some ways, I think, you know, people get locked up and then they get locked out of their community.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, I love what Alma does is in a very indigenous way, not a savior way, a way that's like, you are part of our community and we love having you back, you know, and you contribute. You know, in wonderful ways, and we want to acknowledge it. So it's like, you know, I love that message. And also, especially with, like, Vietnamese Americans, like, you know, no one wants to admit that, you know, a lot of Vietnamese Americans are incarcerated. Like, it's like something they just want to not deal with. And I love the compassion in which Alma does their work. So, you know, like, it tugs at my heart in a different way, right?
Sure.
So La Cocina, you know, they, you know, like, they rep women of color businesses,
yep.
You know, like, that's what they do, and they encourage it, and, like, they are such a, their place where, it's not like, you know, the women are, like, kick-ass already, but they just needed that extra, you know, that institutional help to get them to have their, you know, their talents shine, you know? And so I love that, and actually, I called up Caleb, who's the ED of La Cocina, said, hey, I really want to bring the Bunching Collective to San Francisco. Do you know a space? Because I just feel like if from LA, I would just choose the shittiest place. And it would be like everybody in the Bay would, like, I would never do that there.
Right.
And he said, well, what is it that you're looking for? And I said, oh, you know, I just want a communal space for people to cook. And, you know, like, here we're doing 140, you know, so something like, you know, that kind of that kind of space. And he goes, well, you know, we only have a capacity of 40, but we do a tamalada where they do different shifts.
Oh.
And so I'm like, so they do 250 people. They turn over 250 people in a day for the tamalada. I said, oh, this is perfect. I hadn't thought about doing shifts that way. And so I just said, let me add one shift and see what happens. And it sold out. And then we added another shift, and it sold out. And we added another shift, and it's 120 now. It sold out. Everybody was asking for more. I'm like, I'm not sure. I want to do another class,
right.
You know. But at the same time, like, I'm like.
But you don't want to turn people away.
Exactly. You know, so I'm just, I might kill myself. I don't know yet. I haven't, like, added the fourth fourth shift yet, but that's probably why I'm gonna die early, because I just like can't say no, you know. but yeah, I love that, you know, like this is exactly what BCC, you know, BCC is, yeah, is about. It's just like, you know, bumping community, having solidarity work, you know, across communities, you know. So I said, I would love to do it at La Cocina if you'd let me.
That's really, that's amazing. So as we sort of wrap up here, tell me, where can people find out more information about Bonchon Collective and about Red Boat and about your work?
You can follow us on Instagram. That's like the best. So follow us on Red Boat Fish Sauce, or me at Dipet, DIEPETTE, like Babette, but Dipet. or you can just go on the website, redboatfishsauce.com, or Good Girl Dinette. That's the only place that Good Girl Dinette exists, is like online. But yeah, that's still my kind of parent company.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time this morning to chat.
Thanks for listening to Feast Your Ears today. You can find more online at redboatfishsauce.com, and you can follow Deep on Instagram at Deepette, DIEPETTE. You can find Feast Your Ears, as well as lots of other great shows, at heritageradionetwork.org, on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please reach out to me if you have any questions. You can find me on email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com, and you can follow me on Instagram, @thefoodballer. Talk to you next week. Feast Your Ears is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter, @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.